Scatman's Avenue. Hey guys, welcome to another episode of View from the Cheap Seats. We are the Sklar Brothers. We have a great guest on the show today, Michael Costa from The Daily Show. He is a brilliant comedian and he a high-level tennis player as well.
He was ranked 864th. He played for the University of Illinois. He coached at the University of Michigan. He understands. He was at the Saddle Ranch. It's not Saddle Ranch. It's Saddleback, Saddlebrook Academy when Marty Fish was there. I just watched the Marty Fish documentary. We get into all that with him. Obviously, just after the U.S. Open and Novak Djokovic failing in his bid to win his 21st Grand Slam, to win the calendar year Grand Slam. We talk about all of it, the pressure of tennis on these players now.
He's got a great tennis podcast, Tennis Anyone.
Yeah, so he knows we'll get into that with him. But first and foremost, you know, it's so funny. We try so hard on this show to do sports and comedy on the highest possible level. There are very few people that do it on that level.
There are very few people who kind of wade in the same waters of sports and comedy. It's a small group of
You have to know what you're talking about on a very deep level in a sports sense.
Then have comedy chops that
that's
equal
right.
that.
To understand the undulations of the unspoken undulations of various sports, to understand like the relationship between Bryson DeChambeau and the fans right now, the fact that a fan would steal one of his balls, the fact that he's like working out extra hard to be on a long drive competition right before the Ryder Cup, which is stupid. You have to know so many little things in order to make the big joke. Mm-hmm. And there are very few people that did that. One of the greatest of all time.
The greatest performance of comedy at a sports event
was the 1998 ESPYs Norm Macdonald's monologue. I just went back and watched it, rewatched it again. It was unbelievable. The reason we bring it up is, of course, RIP Norm Macdonald, one of just the best to do it at that level. We talk about Hall of Famers. We talk about what does it mean to be in
There's
the
no
Hall of
Comedy
Fame.
Hall of Fame. Which
there is
crazy.
No Comedy Hall of Fame, and you say to yourself, who would be in the Comedy Hall of Fame? And I would put in their singular talents who did what they did at the highest level, and there was no one else doing it, and Norm was that guy. I just felt like he was a great joke teller. He was an even better joke writer. I mean, he came out to L.A. and wrote on Roseanne before he got SNL in 1991. That's just insane to come out to write on one of the most popular TV shows of all time, certainly in the moment. To get a job writing on that show shows what a great writer he was, and that was reflected in everything he did.
He was an enigma because he was not dirty necessarily. He was just edgy and weird and unexpected. Like, I remember he did a roast and he did just a bunch of old corny jokes instead of going mean and going edgy on the roast the way
He'd start live tweeting a golf event and you just were like, I'm going to go with him on whatever he's doing because he's going on a strand that to us is just, it's almost like Howard Stern. You just got to follow Howard where he takes you because he knows where he's going. Even if we can't see around the corner with what he's doing, he just was that brilliant. So Hall of Fame career, so sad to see him go. You know, David Spade, who is another person who I would say someone that we've gotten to spend time with and gotten to know, he is a singular talent. Like, he's just one of those guys that just the comedy comes from him on such a high level. Even when you're just hanging out, mm-hmm. just the three of us hanging out, he is so funny in such an inherent way that's exactly how Norm was. And he told one of the best stories about Norm to us. So they're at SNL. There, it's like a Wednesday night of an SNL show.
I wish you could remember.
I could remember what the sketch is. I'll find out and we'll update you guys on what that was when we talk to Spade about this. But they were having a hard time basically coming up with the blow to a sketch, which is the final joke, and they could not get it. And they were there till 4 a.m. I mean, people were at each other's throats. It was writers, cast members, everyone was in the writer's room. Like, the drugs have worn off, so people aren't happy. And all of a sudden, at 4 a.m, Norm, who everyone thought was asleep on the couch, like rises up like a ghost, pitches the funniest joke of the night.
Which is kind of a very obvious, not obvious, but it was kind of under their nose, but the simplest, most direct way to get there.
Pitches it. It's perfect. It closes the sketch. It's hilarious. And he just gets up and walks out into the New York morning at 4 a.m. And Spade said that was the greatest mic drop he'd ever seen.
It's a walk-off.
And he was that guy, and he just inspires that much joy when thinking about him. So to lose that guy this week, super sad. And you know, you have to tip your cap to one of the best to ever do it. And I know this is a sports podcast, but it's sports and comedy. And
go back and watch his ESPY's 1998 opening monologue.
There is no way he could do half of it. I'm amazed at the jokes that he was allowed to do.
Well, I don't think they knew what they were getting into, and I think this probably reshaped. It's like when Bob Gibson was so dominant, then they had to like lower the mound. I think he changed the game for everyone who followed him, and that's how dominant and special he was. So
we'll dedicate this episode to the great Norm MacDonald. Michael Costa's on the other side of the break. We're going to talk about the U.S. Open, Novak Djokovic, talk about the pressure on people like Naomi Osaka, and then later in Quick Hits, talk about John McEnroe standing behind his comments that, you know what, sometimes the pressure is so great, it's not for everybody. All that coming up on View from the Cheap Seats, plus Rodman later. We'll be right back. Hey, all you girls and boys, move your feet out to the open space.
We got nothing on you. Hey guys, welcome back to View from the Cheap Seats. In case you're tuning in from another podcast and you're trailing down the podcast dial and you're here, we have an old buddy of ours, a comedian we love, a guy who ripped it up on The Daily Show, and he is our, I would say, resident tennis expert at a very pivotal time in the world of tennis.
Mm-hmm. I want to say he was ranked 864th. Is that as high as you got, Michael Costa?
Welcome to you'd also know that because it's still my email signature.
Oh, 860, yeah, right. Michael Costa,
864. Still an incredible ranking. You never saw any major activity, but you played competitive tennis. My first question to you, as I watched the Marty Fish documentary on, did you watch that on Netflix?
I haven't seen it yet, but I love, you know, I've been getting text messages from people that don't watch tennis to watch it. And so that means it must be good.
So it's one of those things where you're like, God damn it, Netflix, you managed to stand in the zeitgeist of what's going on right now.
I know.
With like, because Marty Fish dealt with mental health stuff. Mm-hmm. And I remember talking to you about this on the podcast, how mentally grueling it was to like be fighting against the guy you were going to share a room with just for like a couple of different, you'd be fighting for a couple of bucks in a match where you play for 5 hours and basically kill each other and then have to hang out later, how mentally tough that was on the tennis circuit.
Yeah, you would play and fight to the death, and then there would only be one shuttle back to the 2.5 hour away hotel. So now you're sitting next to the guy. Right. That's not what happened. I mean, Marty famously pulled out of, I think, the quarterfinals of the US Open against Roger Federer because of mental health issues and his heart was going crazy. I can't even compare or begin to understand the pressures of that level. But fun is a weird word to use, but it's fun to watch the general public start to little bit grasp what is needed in the mind to compete at such a high level. And obviously, you know, watching gymnastics at the Olympics this year was another situation where more people became aware of that.
Well, I mean, look, in tennis, you could hurt yourself. In tennis, you can definitely injure yourself, but you're not flipping over and could land on your neck. I mean,
in tennis, you would embarrass yourself.
Yeah. That's it.
In gymnastics, you could die.
You could paralyze yourself.
Right. They're bigger stakes.
Right. There's never a point on the tennis court where you go to hit a backhand and you don't know where you are.
You know what I mean? There's great examples. I don't know if you remember Pete Sampras, when his coach died, he had a really tough match at the Australian Open, and he broke down on the court. There's a great example of when Jim Courier was number one in the world, and he couldn't handle the pressure anymore, and he just started reading a book on the changeover. You know, people break. People mentally break, and especially in sport.
That's why
Agassi's book, whole book was about that.
Open, yeah. I mean, that's why in the Royal Tenenbaums, it was so funny that like that was like played in a funny way. He's just kicking the ball over the net, Luke Wilson, his character, but like he cracked under the pressure of what existed in that moment. And you're like
Borg didn't crack under the pressure in his playing days, but then he tried to kill himself.
Right,
so,
I mean, it bottled up. And when you watch Borg play, he was bottling it. you know, forever and ever, he kept it stoic. He kept it composed. And then it might not have come out during his playing years, like right. you're saying,
but then he...
years later, for every Naomi Osaka, for every Marty Fish, for every, and I'll call them, you know, world-class tennis players.
Yeah.
There's another 10,000 juniors that were as equally skilled that did break mentally and didn't get to that level. So, you know, it takes its toll.
In the Marty Fish documentary, he talks about like the difference between him and Roddick talks about it too, the difference between him and Andy Roddick. Mm-hmm. And you say Andy Roddick was the hopes and dream. The two of them were the hopes and dreams and the future of U.S. tennis post Agassi, post Sampras, you know, and the U.S. had an unbelievable run, the run mm-hmm. that we all enjoyed when we were kids that you probably grew up on.
McEnroe, Connors, mm-hmm. Michael Chang,
Jim Courier. I mean, that was
you don't
like,
even mention Vitas Gerulaitis, who won 3 Grand Slams.
Right.
You know, because it's not big enough.
Was he an American, Vitas Gerulaitis?
Yeah, he was, wasn't he? Is this wrong? Fact check? Somebody?
I thought he was somewhere. But nonetheless, yes, that's like, it's an amazing run of Americans who were at the
dominance.
Top, dominant and at yeah. the top of it and in Grand Slam.
Agassi, Sampras.
In Grand Slam finals. And that just took all the way up until Roddick. And you're like, okay, the mantle's being passed to Roddick. But what was interesting in the thing is in the documentary, they talked about how Marty Fish just didn't have that. He was skilled and he was amazing. Mm-hmm. Okay. You can't be at that level if you aren't just have incredible skill. But he didn't have that killer instinct of, I want to rip your throat out and step on it and then show it to the crowd. Like, Roddick was that kid. And so Fish went to live with the Roddicks. And his dad, Roddick's dad, was like a military dude and was waking him up at 5 a.m. to go practice. And Fish is like, what, dude? It's so early. And what happened was the trajectories of their careers. So Roddick gets super, you know, wins the 2003 U.S. Open. You say to yourself, okay, this is the beginning mm-hmm. of the next thing. And then mm-hmm. immediately gets stonewalled by the fact that the 3 best tennis players in history all come up at the same time.
And you know, he really could have beaten Fed at Wimbledon finals, I think, at least twice and didn't. Yeah. When Roddick was coming up, I was playing at University of Illinois, and our coach, Craig Tiley, who's now the director of Australian Open,
yeah,
said, I want you guys to watch Roddick, but only look at his eyes.
Yeah.
Just watch his eyes. In fact, he would like cover the screen and say, do your eyes look like that when you play tennis?
Right.
I mean, it was like a lion hunting. It was, I will win at all costs. You know, he wasn't like within the rules. He was out for blood.
Yeah. And he was like a lion hunting or a woman at like on Molly at Coachella. Just eyes like saucers.
Or a dentist hunting a lion from Minnesota
at Coachella.
Or a dentist upselling you some bullshit, you know.
Invisalign.
Yeah. Now, Marty, who I played with at Saddlebrook Tennis Academy.
You went to Saddlebrook.
I went to Saddlebrook, and Marty and I were on the same court every day. Marty and I were similar levels. It was me, Marty, Scott Humphries, who was a former junior Wimbledon champion who blew out his knee.
Who then went on to date Kim Kardashian and marry. Oh, no, that was Chris Humphries. Chris, sorry. Chris Humphries.
Scott Humphries took out an insurance policy on his body and then got injured, and he was making more money by being injured than by potentially playing. So it's unbelievable. And Jennifer Capriati. So every day I would practice with Marty and
You had great weed the whole time.
Thank you, Capriati.
Marty and I were a similar level.
Yeah.
And then I went to college, and then 3 years later, I'm watching him in the round of 16 of the U.S. Open. So he had a trajectory jump compared to me. But, you know, Roddick was one of the hungriest athletes to win I've ever seen.
So he's so hungry. He's got all the talent. He puts it all together. He has a superstar status about him. He's got mm-hmm. superstar hair.
Superstar look.
Superstar look, yep. Superstar hair. He's that guy. And then...
runs
that's
into the buzzsaw.
That's not enough, and runs into the buzzsaw that is perhaps one of the greatest athletes across all sports. I put him in the category. I don't know why I put Federer, because
Federer, Tiger Woods are kind of like the
Federer.
Those are the comps.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Tiger mm-hmm. Woods.
Because right. we had never seen anyone who was so dominant for so long. And then, of course, Nadal steps in, and he's the mm-hmm. only guy who can beat Federer. He's still dominant on clay like nobody's business.
And then Djokovic, like...
the best one, maybe of the three, comes in third. And so Roddick's up against the buzzsaw. I think about the equivalent maybe in the comp in college football is like Michigan to Ohio State in the last 17 years.
Or Auburn, Alabama. It's like you're not Alabama's in your conference. You're not going to beat them.
Yeah.
They just have – they're just better. And no matter how good you are, no matter how hungry you are, you've got those hungry eyes. Eric Carmen, you've got those hungry eyes. No matter how hungry you are, it still isn't enough. Because like you said, there were a couple times where you're like, oh, Roddick's going to beat him. And he like had him down, and Federer just came back.
He had a high backhand or forehand volley in one of those tie breaks that I know Andy Roddick still thinks about when he goes to bed at night. That if he would have made that volley, it could have been a different story. This is sport. This is why I loved, and it's taken me a few days of digestion to get here, but I loved what happened Sunday with Daniil Medvedev and Novak Djokovic.
So that's what I was going to tell you. I thought Daniil Medvedev was Andre Medvedev. That was a huge mistake.
Yeah, remember him? Exactly. I know.
Before, Daniil, 6 foot eight. I was like, could this be the same person? Is this some sort of, and you should probably, with your quick change artist ability, go on AGT.
I have to admit, when Daniil came on the scene, I probably Googled that as well, because I'm like, this isn't the guy that was up two sets to love on Agassi in the French Open when his wig, remember his wig started going all wacky? This is sport. You don't, just because we want this Hollywood ending, just because Gail King is at the tennis match, just because Brad Pitt and Bradley Cooper flew in together, it doesn't mean that Novak is going to do it. And Daniil Medvedev has been grinding, trying to win slams for 7 years.
Yeah.
He's 25. He's an unbelievable talent. And this, the hunger for him to win his first was a little more than Novak's hunger on that day to win his 21st.
So do you remember when Novak beat Andy Roddick at the U.S. Open and was interviewed afterwards? I love the interview in front of the whole state, like
in front of each other.
They do it, they kind of do it at Wimbledon, but they don't really. It's like only in New York can you have like just an interview in front of people who's like, say, louder, we can't, you know, like the people.
Yeah.
And like,
was this, was this when Novak started impersonating everybody?
No, this is
okay. So I don't remember this. I don't remember this particular interview.
So Novak, he gets booed because everybody wanted Roddick to win. He gets booed, and Novak has to be like, "I'm sorry, I beat your guy. This is everything in the world to me, and I'm sorry." And in that moment, I kind of liked him, you know, until I found out the way he eats and his food choices. I kind of liked the guy, and I was like, "I think this guy." He's kind of funny and self-deprecating in that moment of like having the entire New York audience boo because their guy didn't win. And he said, I'm sorry. Even I wish this guy would have won. I don't know why I beat him. I'm sorry.
I love Novak Djokovic. It has taken some time.
Yeah. He grows on you.
And the rawness and the humanity that he carries on the court and the anger and the frustration, and he has this insatiable need to be liked.
Yes.
And it's
we all do.
As I know. And I mean, look what we do for a living. We're insane. You know, what are we, what happened to us?
Yeah.
And I just relate to it, and Roger and Rafa always got the attention. They always got the endorsements. I mean, even now, Novak is wearing an ASIC shirt. No, he's wearing a Uniqlo shirt and an ASIC shoe. You know, he can't even get the full thing.
I know.
It's like, you know. So I love when he cracks rackets. I love that he tries to throw an exhibition in the middle of COVID. And then that exhibition becomes like patient zero for Serbia. I mean, he's just always trying to be liked, and it always is exploding in his
backfires. Face. Backfires on him. And, you know, there's a moment where I'm like, maybe he isn't meant to win his 21st.
Yeah.
Maybe this is the tennis world saying, you've gone as far as you can go, and it's incredible. And these three all-time greats, because these are the three best.
Yep.
These three all-time greats should only be stuck at 20. Nobody should go ahead so that we're having the discussion of, like, who was better.
Right.
Even though I think he's probably going to win one. He's probably going to win the Australian next year.
Well, it is just so fascinating now that he lost that, because Rafa can still win the French. I mean, he almost won the French this year. And if you want to, I mean, Leila Fernandez on the women's side
beat
Naomi Osaka, Not just physically. She beat her where Naomi Osaka took a press conference and said, I may not play tennis again.
I got to step away.
You know, that's how you want to beat somebody.
Right.
Novak Djokovic beat Rafa in the semis of the French this year, and Rafa limped off the court and hasn't played a competitive match since. It's like when Ronda Rousey's just never been the same, right?
Never. After Holly Holm, never.
And Rafa's the king of clay, and what Novak did to him this year, it almost was like that. It was like, will he come back? Will he be the same? Them stuck at 20 is very interesting. It's very fun. And as both of you know, can you believe we haven't even mentioned Pete Sampras, who when we grew up, he was the greatest ever to live.
Was he at 14?
You know,
he
was laughable.
14. It's laughable.
Like, I got 14 in my wallet right now.
Djokovic beat Nadal so badly, he can't even watch the movie Ghost because there's clay work done in there. He cannot literally involved.
Can't even listen to Clay Aiken.
He cannot watch old footage of Muhammad Ali.
Like, if he hears Unchanted Melody, is that the name of the song? I'm just going to go with that. It's hard for him. I killed it.
He can't even watch that song when they're doing my love.
Yeah, that song.
Yeah, Unchained Melody. I don't know why I did that. But yes, no, I mean, it is, you want to beat guys and you want to beat players, like you said. The Fernandez victory definitely made Naomi Osaka, but I feel like Naomi Osaka was going there. She lost in the Olympics. Again, I watched this Netflix documentary about her. It was like a several part documentary, really showing just what it's like Entourage meets, but instead of the main guy who's an actor, it's a woman, and she loves fashion, and she now has all these people kind of hanging on her and needing her. Like, think about her fashion people, like when she's like, I got to step away from everything. And they're like, whoa, wait, we have all these designs.
That's what I think. Look, anytime I've mentioned her name publicly on my podcast, Tennis Anyone podcast with Michael Costa, plug, I just get annihilated. I mean, the internet is not there to support my opinion of Naomi Osaka, but my opinion is that there's too much going on. You know, it's fashion, it's endorsement, it's Japan, it's USA, and it's just like, yo, I'm having a hard time keeping track of your tennis. I imagine how you're feeling, you know? Yeah. The agent, the manager, somebody has got to say, she's unhappy, we're making shitloads of money, that's true, but there's something going on here. How can we help support her?
Right.
So, you know, she isn't quitting tennis. She's so great to watch. We can't lose her in the sport.
We can't. I love her. And truthfully, like, it makes me relate to her more. You know, like, we're the type of guys that have to do 50 different things. We're doing podcasts. We're doing stand-up. Yep. We're trying to do – we're acting. Mm-hmm. We're writing stuff. We're all – I understand being pulled in different directions. And then you're a dad, and you've got to be the – and a husband, and you're with your friend. It's like we get pulled in all these directions, and we're not making Naomi Osaka money. So
– No.
But there – she,
you're making Sklar money, which is good.
It's
good money.
It's not good.
Although she made $55 million last year.
I want to take this opportunity to say that I am stepping away from being a Sklar brother for a brief period.
You guys took a mental health break for a little while.
I needed to.
So part of me is like, I love that she's talking about it. I love that she has the guts to sit there and cry, you know, and show weakness and not be like, oh my God, I'm showing weakness. She's just like,
This is me because you remember when Serena would have bad matches or have bad moments, her like default mode was just to lash out at reporters and lash out at people. It was attack. It was anger. Yeah. And Naomi's is to show vulnerability immediately.
Yeah.
And you do get the point. Like, what's hard is that when people say, look, there's so much pressure in this thing, maybe this isn't for you. I think she's kind of saying that right now, too. Mm-hmm, she's like, maybe I'm not cut out for this life, which would be a shame because she's such an amazing talent. And that's where we all get sad because we're like, oh, you're the next great thing for us to root for. But
it's just, I guess, going back to the discussion about Roddick is like Roddick had it all. He had the talent and the hunger. He was there at the right time until it wasn't the right time. Like,
you could have it all, and it still is bad for you because of the external factors.
Yeah. So like, here's Naomi Osaka who goes through the, as a kid, you know, you see the little, there's lots of footage of her and her sister, and her sister was a great tennis player. An amazing. Sure.
Yeah.
And like, she just outplayed her and outperformed her. And then, okay, you got to get out on the stage and that's you. And she had the drive and she could handle the pressure and she did it all the way up to that point. And then it gets so bright, like Marty Fish, it got so bright on him, mm-hmm. the lights that,
and then Marty Fish, you look at his life and you're like, wait, maybe he had a better life
than Roddick. Roddick, you know, who won the one and then had the expectations and couldn't live up to it for the rest of the time. And Marty Fish, who's like, at a certain point in time, he said, all I want to do is make the WTA event at the end of the year where it's just the top eight guys.
Right.
You know, the top eight players in the world. Because that to me would be like the ultimate validation. You know, it's like almost
it's like being invited to the most prestigious comedy festival. Okay, I'm very, 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 very good at this.
Right.
I'm considered one of the best by my peers. And I'm happy with that. And there's a lot to be said for that. I mean,
being okay with that. There's like, so he took his mental health, which was like, oh my God, he went in and his heartbeat was, you know, racing. It was like, you know, and when he decided to pull out of the Federer match, the quarterfinals, and he's like, this is not healthy for me. Like, I'm not even saying I think I'm feeling sick. Like, you can put a thing on my heart and measure it and be like, this is not good. My heart rate right now is 73 because I'm talking to a very calm Michael Costa, but like his heart rate was over 200. It's like, that is not going to end well.
As you get higher and higher up,
sure.
It is all mental. It becomes inches. It becomes slivers of difference between
The high backhand that could have changed you in two Grand Slam events. You thought of differently.
What I loved about and love about Novak Djokovic is he so openly talks about his mental training.
Yeah. You know,
after every match this year of the U.S. Open, it was, I'm working on staying in the present.
Yeah.
I work with my coach on how do I feel comfortable in these uncomfortable moments.
Right.
Rafa's coach, his former coach, his uncle, who, by the way, never accepted payment from Rafa because he said, if you pay me, I can't tell you what to do. Don't you love that? Rafa and his uncle would work on being prepared for feeling unprepared. I don't even know how you do that. You know, we will work on these 10 things that we might face this match, and then we'll work on not knowing what you are about to face. You know, so I love that the top players, this is part of their strategy because the mentality is the most important.
So I mean, I guess you would, to prepare for that, you'd be like, all right, we're going to work on some forehands now. And then you just start serving to his backhand.
Yeah. Or like, we're going to work on forehands and then you start throwing like darts at him.
Yes. Right.
Yeah, you may face that.
Or pipe in weird crowd noise that distracts you of something.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
It's a huge part of it. It's the same thing when you think about like NBA teams that the season is so long. Mm-hmm. Well, what is the key to winning it all? You got to keep your guys healthy.
Yeah.
So now teams are practicing in the regular season. Hey, maybe we don't play LeBron, you know, 80 games in the regular season. Like, that was fine in the past and whatnot, but like, we want to win a championship. I don't want him falling down and having an injury, but if you don't play him enough, he could get injured. So like, there's this delicate balance of that. It all becomes something that has to get factored in. And so the mental health is such a huge component. It's just, I don't know.
I used to love that with Popovich and the Spurs. You know, they would go on an away game.
Yeah.
And all these people would buy tickets to see the Spurs, and he wouldn't even play the starting five, you know? That's and it's right. like, you got a long season. I got to keep these guys healthy.
Load management. Yeah. Tim Duncan is sitting. You know,
and you realize, though, documentaries like this about Marty Fish, it to me, tell you how hard it is to make it. Like, in my mind, and we tell this to people outside of comedy all the time, we're like, you can make a career of failed pilots and failed shows, mm-hmm. and that's success. That's mm-hmm. like, you're successful. You sold stuff.
Yeah.
You're getting it out there.
Oh, my God. Are you kidding me? A failed pilot means somebody bought the pilot.
Right. Someone bought your idea.
That's what we understand. Whereas there's a whole thing in the population who have been like, we haven't seen the Sklar brothers. Where are they?
Yeah.
Well, we've been working. And I mean, it's just like people don't really understand. So I think now, as we understand this, as Djokovic misses the sort of Grand Slam in the year slam.
The calendar slam.
Calendar slam.
Yeah.
do we need to rethink or recalibrate Rod Laver's, like, his calendar slam? Because you start to look at that and you're like, man, the amount of tiny things that could go wrong and the amount of competition that it's almost like we're to look at Babe Ruth's stats because there were no Negro, you know, leagues players playing in that league. Right. So is he really facing the best of the best? If those players would have been in those in Major League Baseball back then, would he have hit what he hit? Maybe, maybe not.
You know, I in preparation for this podcast, I had every intention of going through Rod Laver's early round matches in his Grand Slams to see if it was like a 6-1, 6-1, 6-0, 6-1, 6-2, 6-1. You know, because it, there is something to be said that if he's not really being tested to the quarterfinals or semifinals, it's just much different. I did not do that, but I intended to.
Right.
So just so you know.
Thank you. But you adjusted, Michael. I mean, as we... even to sort of put that across in a context of other sports. Max Scherzer, 3,000 strikeouts, 200 wins. So you look at, there have only been, I want to say, 18 players in the history of Major League Baseball that have had 3,000 strikeouts and over 200 wins. Now, it used to be when we were kids, 300 wins.
Right.
Was the thing, and that was it.
It used to be 400 batting average, but then you're like, how many hits did Tony Gwynn get in the eighth inning off
of
the
starter pitcher
who wasn't pitching well, who was just still in the game?
Who in this day and age, you yank him in the fifth inning, and all you're seeing is 100-mile-an-hour heat with, like, crazy movement and spider tack. Like,
you can't compare generations. The thing that, because of all these reasons, the thing that I loved seeing at the U.S. Open was Rod Laver was sitting front and center, not to watch his record not get broken like the Miami Dolphins do every time that, you know, their undefeated season is held intact. I hate that. He's there to watch history. He's there to celebrate history. And there's also a big argument because of the amateurism and the way tennis was in the 60s. Rod Laver didn't even play as many Grand Slams in his prime as he was allowed, as he would have been able to. So he could have, you could make the argument that he would have won way more. But the fact that he's there in support, I think is just awesome.
The fact that he was wearing Stan Smith shoes, also That's amazing because it's just an unexpected thing. You'd think he'd wear Rod Laver's, for Christ's sake.
Was he wearing Stan Smith's?
But how great would that be if he was?
Stan Smith famously was the, this is, every comedian should know this. I'm sure you already know it. But Stan Smith was not the first face on the Stan Smith shoe.
Who was
it? Tennis player.
Oh, yeah.
And the contract came up and he kind of wanted more money and they told him F you. And then they decided to throw Stan's face on it. And it's just a perfect, beautiful, like, relax. If you're not the first choice, stay the course, keep winning championships. And eventually you'll get the most famous tennis shoe ever of all time, period.
Hey, nobody cares that James Taylor, the only reason you have a music career is because the Beatles sent a tape to someone. No one even knows that.
No one knows it.
You got to do tons of heroin because you got lucky.
Or Michael J. Fox that Eric Stoltz shot for like a month on Back to the Future. And they're like, this guy's not working. We got to get someone else.
You can watch it on YouTube. Have you seen it?
Yeah, it's hard.
It's crazy to watch Back to the Future with a different... I know. And they even, like, shot it. I think they may even wrapped it, and they cleared Michael J. Fox's sketch. I mean, what an insult.
Yeah, it's insane. Yeah. But again, I think what we're seeing with all of this is, you know, tennis people, and you said gymnastics, but I think we're watching a few tennis stars kind of peel back the curtain a little bit and show us all the things that go into, like, so many things have to go right in order for you to have a champion. That's why you look at the three greatest male tennis players of all time.
And the fact that they were around with each other.
At the exact same era.
That's true.
They had to go through each other.
Like, the fact that it was, if you were to artfully try and give them each 20 victories over the last 20 years, you couldn't do it.
No, the fact
that it happened is, like, almost a miracle in and of itself. So.
When Novak, it was either the French or I think it was Wimbledon this year when he won it, he, in his speech, he thanked Roger and Rafa. He said, without these guys, and by the way, they don't all like each other.
No, they don't.
You know, they definitely don't like Novak, but he was thanking them, saying, without those guys, without them setting the standard, you know, I pushed myself so hard to get here. And that was a very interesting and respectful thing to say to your rival, who is still your current and active rival.
Right. Mm-hmm. So was this a
Michigan doesn't thank Ohio State very often,
enough,
or vice versa.
Enough. wait, so is Medvedev for real? Are we looking at the next great guy to take over and win
a
bunch?
6'8". Or is he Kevin Curran?
He's excellent. I mean, 2 years ago, he made the U.S. Open final and went down 2 sets to love to Rafa. And I was at that match. I was lucky to be at that match.
Wow.
And
Daily
I was like, okay, this is kind of expected. New guy playing against one of the greats. You know, this is a good effort. Fights his way back into a 5th set.
Yeah.
And I just saw a little twinkle in the eye, a little Russian hacker.
Yeah.
A little, you know, nobody just puts me away.
Uh-huh.
And it was like, whoa, this guy's the real deal. Now, of course, in sport, I think he's the real deal. 2 years later, he wins his Grand Slam.
It takes
he
that long.
He is, you know, when you go to Washington Square Park in New York and you watch these old guys play chess and you're like, is he good at chess? Is he excellent at chess? Or is he a homeless man that knows how and you find out he's like a world champ. That's Daniil Medvedev. He doesn't look like he should be this amazing tennis player. He really is. I would predict, I predict many more Grand Slams for him.
Wow. That's amazing.
He was excited to stop Novak in his tracks.
He was
frothing at the mouth for the opportunity to ruin history.
Spoiler. So his, and he almost, and talk about almost ruining that match that you saw, and New Yorkers had to kind of love him. I bet he won them over when you come back from that far down, because most New Yorkers are like, all right, I'm going to take the 7 back in. Everyone's thinking about what they got. I got to go to D'Agostino's and pick up some food before that. Everyone's thinking about their next thing. And then suddenly you're like, oh, no, we could be here till 1 a.m.
They're almost mad that he had fight in him. And then once he showed that it was going to be a long, it was like, oh, we're part of this great
thing. You want to be part of something historic.
So yeah.
Now, are you surprised? I mean, you know Medvedev. I jokingly said it sounds like the other Medvedev.
Yeah.
I think the average person who's a sports fan out there, you have to be inside tennis to know who this guy is. Like the regular people do not know who Daniil Medvedev is. So I don't think that's great for tennis right now. I do think on the women's side, and you saw that with the ratings, the women's ratings were higher than the men's ratings.
Yeah.
And we're kind of seeing in the world of U.S. soccer, the fact that the U.S. Soccer Federation is now doing contracts that are equal for both of them, and rightfully so, because the women's team is far more fun to watch than the men's team. But the idea, I mean, the men's team's coming back, but still. But the idea that, you know, the women's draw to me is they have so much more excitement about the excitement about the people coming up. And this Canadian girl is just incredible.
Yeah, and they were all at the Met Gala, you know, they all stayed after a lot of the men did too. But
loving life.
They're loving life. And they're so young that they almost like forgot to get intimidated. They haven't been injured yet and lost 2 years to a knee rehab, so they don't realize how truly special this opportunity is, and that's fun to watch.
It is fun to watch. But that was the way we grew up when we watched tennis. Like Tracy Austin was like 16 and playing in finals.
Jennifer Capriati was 14.
Yeah,
14.
Yeah, Jennifer Capriati won a tournament, and they gave her a Porsche, and she wasn't old enough to drive it.
That's right.
All right, so my last question.
She probably did drive it, but
She did. She drove it high. She was high as hell.
Yeah.
So great weed. And then she opened that great sandwich shop.
Yeah,
Capriati's. All right, so I want to ask you before we take a break and then do some quick hits. I want to ask you: is it possible, and how do we essentially revive American men's tennis? Like, is that a possibility?
Yeah.
Are there guys in the pipeline that we should be excited about that we don't
know? Francis Tiafoe, but who else?
Well, you know, Brad Gilbert has been a broken record on this topic and has said, until American juniors play 30 to 40% of their competitive matches on clay, we will not create more champions. You know, in Europe, you play on a slow red clay court for half the year outdoors. Indoors, you play in a fast indoor carpet. Uh-huh. You have no choice but to develop a complete all-around game.
Right.
I came through the American Junior Tennis system with no thanks to the USTA, who, you know, never had any support or any money from them, but played their tournaments.
Right.
It's all hard courts, man. All I had court. A big serve. And I could run to the net, and then if you hit the ball to me twice, I didn't really have any, you know, I had a very low shot tolerance. If there yeah. was, I watched these, you know, Medvedev, there was a Djokovic-Zverev point in the semifinals. They were kind of like back and forth, and no one was really showing their cards, and all of a sudden they had a 53-ball rally.
Wow.
And it just opened everything up. It opened up the emotions. It opened up the crowd. It opened up Zverev's second serve. Was getting a little wobbly after that. Yeah. And I was just thinking, I bet you in all of my life of playing tennis, I bet you I've played sets with less than 53 shots.
That's amazing.
Junior tennis clubs, cities that have courts, they need more clay courts.
Yeah.
That's my answer, but that's basically a copied answer of Brad Gilbert, who I agree with.
So why don't they do that?
They should.
I mean, the USTA makes roughly $400 million every US Open. Now, this U.S. Open was weird because last year they had no fans, and I'm sure they're operating under a deficit. I know Australian Open lost like $17 million last year. All of sports is crazy and weird this year. You know, the country clubs do have clay courts, but it's a very good question, and I don't know why. I got a little crappy little court down here in my neighborhood in Brooklyn. Like, it should be clay. There's people lined up every day to play on it. Throw in $10 and put a little clay on it.
Just ruin your shoes a little bit. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
Play some Clay Aiken.
Play some Clay Aiken. All right, let's take a break. Michael Costa's with us. I'm so excited. So fun to talk about.
He's got a great podcast. Your podcast is called, by the way, one more time,
Tennis Anyone with Michael Costa.
Tennis Anyone with Michael Costa. If you love this discussion, he goes even deeper on that. We'll be right back with Quick Hits and then later a discussion with the great, I say great, Dennis Rodman. Is he great? Yeah. All right, we'll be right back. More of you from the Cheap Seats right after this.
Hey guys, welcome back to the show. We want to mention to people, we have a Patreon, Randy and I, Sklar Brothers Patreon, where we are doing
new episodes of Cheap Seats. The first time we've done new episodes of Cheap Seats in over 15 years.
Yes.
And we've done Battle of the Network Stars. We did a high dive championship from 1983 at SeaWorld. Slap fighting that took place in Branson, Missouri, even though nobody was from any other country. International slap fighting. It is so much fun. So all you got to do is go to patreon.com, look up Sklar Brothers, and join that. It's $5 a month. We do extra stuff. We'll do a little extra quick hit with Michael Costa here. Mm-hmm. You can get extra content from this podcast, weekly podcast, and plus that, $5 a month. It's less than a cup of coffee, unless you live in Omaha. All right, that's how you do it. We're going to be doing some live shows. If you go to supersklars.com, check us out live when we're with you. Okay, let's get into some quick hits. Remember when there were rules that you had to follow at work? Like that, not anymore. Like apparently... So Navy football coaching staff offensive assistant, and he is offensive, Billy Ray Stutzman says he was fired for not complying with the program's requirement that all staff members receive a COVID-19 vaccine. That is the rule. That is the
rule. You want to work somewhere, that's like you can't smoke in this restaurant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You smoke, they make you leave.
Right? Yeah. Like, but we've now just – we're past that where people are like, oh, I'm the employee, but I can tell you what I'm going to do or not. And he's upset.
I mean, this is happening, and I think this is what's supposed to happen. Is if a few people lose their jobs, maybe people will just go get the vaccination. By the way, most people that are against the vaccination already have like 15 vaccinations in their body previously from being a child, and so do their kids.
Right. And most of them don't have jobs.
Right.
So let's be honest about who they are as people. They sit around and watch TV.
He said he was unable to so this is another thing. It's like... He couldn't even say, I don't believe in the vaccine. He said he was unable to follow the requirements of the Naval Academy's COVID-19 policy because for a religious exemption.
Mm.
All right. Like, what religion is telling you you should not stay healthy? Like, every religion
Who's your God, Jenny McCarthy?
Exactly. Thank you.
I kind of like, though, with COVID, how you can use it to your advantage, whether you want to or not. Like, I was shooting something recently, and there was one of those guys that kept hanging around the set and wanted to do a lot of chit chatting and wanted to talk about this. And I was like, you know, man, COVID protocol says I need to go over here. And like, you know what I mean? So you can sometimes use it to your advantage.
Yeah, you totally. And you should.
Look, if you do not want, if you don't want the vaccine and you want a job that is, or you want to be around a lot of violence, like a Navy football game, go up and be a bouncer at Sturgis.
Sure.
You can be as free as you want up there.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. I don't know if you saw the VMAs, but Conor McGregor presented at the VMAs. I sat and watched the VMAs just to see how far from my life is regular MTV. And
first of all, it was on the CW.
Was it on the CW?
I think it aired on the CW.
I don't even know. I just watched it on my thing. But like, it was... But,
I mean, the fact that Madonna was there probably made all of us feel a little more like welcomed, right?
Yeah, I mean...
She got a Lifetime Achievement Award?
No, the Foo Fighters won like a Lifetime Achievement Award, and they were great. But Conor McGregor was there, which seemed just strange. And he had a cane because obviously he broke his leg and he's not fully all the way back. But apparently he and Machine Gun Kelly got into like a weird scuffle on the red carpet. I'm like, Machine Gun Kelly, you probably don't know who this guy is. Let me just tell you, this is a guy who picked up a trash can and threw it at a bus.
Yeah.
Full of MMA fighters, okay? Yes. He doesn't care.
Faces criminal charges as well.
Right.
Yes.
All he wants to do is come over and shake your hand and take a picture with you. And Machine Gun Kelly is like, no.
Yeah.
He's like, no. And think about that, because again, we were talking with you, deep discussion about these athletes, the Naomi Osakas of this world. They don't get told no that much. Once you achieve that level of success, nobody is like, no. If Naomi Osaka is like, I would like a picture with whomever, they're not going to be like, no, you can't. Like, that's the first time that anybody has ever told that person no.
Also, at a public event, you know, at an event where, like, you literally go to show off your skill set, it's not like, you know, he knocked on his home. Machine Gun Kelly, I think there's a reason that he isn't upper echelon of his music world, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, but then you look at like Megan Fox and you're like, what broke in your childhood that you're with this guy?
Yeah. Who did something very bad to you that you're now trying to replay that with this person?
Yeah.
I think it's a low point for Conor because he loses the fight, kind of is embarrassed, gets invited to present at the MTV movie. He's like, okay, I'm larger than the sport, then goes there and
throws a drink.
He got pushback, spilled a little drink on his pink suit for, I'm assuming, for Susan G. Komen breast cancer awareness.
Yep.
And then he takes the drink and throws it at Machine Gun Kelly. Machine Gun Kelly has bodyguards that are so big, they don't care. They will destroy you, and also you're walking with a cane.
Yeah. One thing I love about fighters and boxers in particular is they will do anything to promote, you know? And when I did that sports show with Regis, RIP, at Fox Sports 1, we would get all these basketball players and we get everybody and say, hey, we have an idea. And they'll, I can't do that. We would get like Floyd Mayweather in and be like, we want to throw darts at a balloon and you're wearing, yes, I'll do it. I got to fight. I got to promote. You know, like boxers and fighters will do anything for attention. I love it.
Final quick hit. John McEnroe stands by his comments, and I'm sure you heard these, that Emma Raducanu?
Yeah, Raducanu. That's right.
Raducanu. At Wimbledon. So back at Wimbledon when she had, and we talked all about this, like I guess we call it a panic attack, but she was having trouble breathing. And McEnroe just pointed it out. See, this is where I'm like, I'm all for, by the way, I'm all for explaining, okay, I'm having these problems, I'm having these issues, and I'm having difficulty breathing. It's like, I could not support Marty Fish pulling out anymore because of his own personal health. But then McEnroe was like, this may all be too much for her, is what he posited, because he's an announcer. And then he proceeded to say, I understand when I was 18, I came to Wimbledon, and that's the way I felt in this one moment. I guess the unspoken thing was, but I powered through it. But like this idea that he's getting tons of grief over this and tons of shit for saying what he said, to me feels like it goes too far and it hurts the case for mental health.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he was comparing himself at age 18, playing Jimmy Connors on center court. He said his knees were shaking and he couldn't do it. And I will say this as someone that's watched him in his broadcast for the last 2 weeks, all he's been is super supportive of Emma Raducanu. And I think his statements were fair. I think he's sticking by them is fair. I think it's all good.
I think you, and I agree with that, what you're saying. What you're going to do by pushing him and saying what you said was wrong is you're going to make a guy who supports this woman be like resentful.
Yeah.
And you're going to push him to a point where he's like, well, screw this. You know, John McEnroe. He's like going to be like, screw this. I'm not going to support this person anymore because even when I'm supporting him, I'm getting shit. So I might as well say what I really feel, which is like buck up, which is either true or not true. But like,
but I think it's funny because he was really alluding to the pressure of the sport. He's saying this sport is not for the faint of heart. This sport is not for someone who can get overwhelmed. It doesn't matter how talented you are. Doesn't matter how amazing you are. In these moments of high pressure, someone will be able to handle that pressure and someone won't. If you can't handle that pressure, then that pressure is going to be there every single time you're in these finals. And
I don't think he was insulting
her. It's funny because I think it might be because it was man to woman.
Yeah.
Because there was a moment on NBA, on Inside the NBA, when Shaq said to Donovan Mitchell, unexpectedly, and it was crazy. Insane. Shaq's like, I don't think you have what it takes to be a champion. He's like, you haven't shown it. He's like, you're not that guy. You think you're that guy, and you're not that guy. And Donovan Mitchell, like you could tell, was like sweating it and was freaking like, okay. Like that's all he kept saying was, okay. Because he didn't know what to say. But then he turned around and he led Utah to the number one spot in the thing. Now, in the end, he couldn't lead them to the finals, but he was kind of hurt and there were other issues and things like that.
Yeah.
But
dude played lights out after that.
Played lights out after that and kind of stuck it back to Shaq. And Shaq was saying, I was just giving him tough love. I love the guy.
Yeah.
But Shaq didn't get the same crap that McEnroe is getting in this scenario. Which is
we love McEnroe's broadcast because he says the truth, and it doesn't always mean that the truth is easily digestible. When Daniil won the U.S. Open, I listened to his post-match press conference. He said, look, I've played Novak 7 times. We analyzed each match. Each match was entirely different. We couldn't even find patterns that I could try to pull for the championship. And then he said this, tennis is a brutal sport.
Yeah.
And that's like from the guy who just won the U.S. Open is calling it brutal. Like nature is brutal. You know, it's hard. Yeah. It's brutal.
Yeah. This business that we're in is brutal that we are trying to do it in. It's crazy. Michael Costa, again, Tennis Anyone is the name of the podcast. Love that you joined and your great follow on Twitter and Instagram, all of it.
We're going to do an extra quick hit with him only for our Patreon in a moment.
But we're going to take a quick break and we'll have Dennis Rodman on the other side. Don't go nowhere, which means go somewhere, but then come back.
That's a double negative.
Hey guys, welcome back to the show. Michael Costa, unbelievable.
Fantastic.
Just, I could talk tennis with him all day long. Let's switch gears and talk about, there's a new movie coming out. I don't know if you saw The Last Dance, and everybody who saw The Last Dance knows that there was a brief period of time in the magical Bulls run with Rodman where Phil Jackson famously just if you love something, you got to let it go.
And hope that it comes back.
And Dennis Rodman was allowed to be...
disappear for 4 days.
That's right. He went on a bender. And there is apparently going to be a movie about that specific bender, a dramatic portrayal of what happened. We don't know what happened.
It's not a comedy?
I don't know what it is, but Dennis Rodman is with us right now, and we'll find out a little. Maybe he's got more intel. Worm, are you there, buddy? Are you there?
Yeah, of course I'm here, okay? I'm always here. You guys can give me anytime you want on the Worm phone. You know that's true. But listen, man, I heard you talking about intel.
Yeah.
What do you want? What do you need? I will get it for you. Anywhere on the globe, we could trot, and we will do it.
I think you should be on the Globetrotters.
You'd be a good Globetrotter.
You'd be amazing on the Globetrotters.
Man, I already played for the Globetrotters, okay? You blinked and missed it, okay?
Sorry.
Yeah, and it was just last year. I'm like, Evander Holyfield, I come in late, okay? But I still got strong skills. Well, I got hops.
Evander got his ass kicked, right. So I don't know if I'd really. Anyway, I want to
signals. Go on.
Okay, I want to talk about this movie that's going to be made about your life for those 4 days or whenever you went on that bender that Phil Jackson allowed you to go on during like the playoffs or what. He gave you a chance to blow off steam, and where'd you go to Vegas? What happened?
Look, man. Look, listen to me about Phil, okay? Because I know there's some bad stuff being said, but from me, trust me, okay? If you love someone, you set them free.
Yes, okay? True. I believe that.
That's what you do.
I believe it.
And that's what he did. And I loved it. Yes, I went to Las Vegas, of course. Where else am I going to go? To the Ukraine? Already been there. Don't need to go there
okay,
again.
Okay. 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 Sure. Okay.
I can't talk about that. That's top secret.
Okay. All right. So wait, who do you want? Who is going to play? Are you going to play yourself in this movie?
Look, I've been auditioning, okay? I've been auditioning a lot.
Okay.
They let me zoom in from my storm drain in Redondo. They don't make me come out there because, you know, it's a long drive.
Yep.
But, you know, right now the producers are telling me that I need to I need to take a couple classes.
Oh.
You know, I don't know if you guys work in Hollywood, if you know anybody, you know, that's good at telling you how to act or whatever.
You need an acting coach? You're an acting coach. What happens if in the middle of preparing for it, you need to go on another bender? You get so method that in the middle of preparing, you allow your coach to get you on another bender.
Well, I mean, I think that's part of the process. That's the, you don't call it a method. That's a method man, acting.
Uh-huh.
Method man actually could be a good
He could be a Dennis good acting Robin. Coach.
He's a good actor.
Oh, I would love to see Method Man play Dennis Rodman.
Hold up, stop, brother.
Sorry.
Okay, just hold on a second. Sitting here talking to me about who's going to play me.
Yeah.
And then you're talking about somebody else. Not me, playing me. And that makes me... That hurts me inside.
I'm sorry. Okay. He's gonna, I know.
Kim, let me tell you something. I talked to Kim Jong last week. Yep. And he said, Tennyson, you are doing this. I have seen it in the prophecy. The third coming of Sun Ra, you have the power within you. Okay? And that's why he lets me do anything I want, you know?
Yep.
Even go to the bathroom in the hallways or whatever. He doesn't care.
He doesn't have a judgment.
Stop judging me, Scott Brothers.
All right, well.
No one's judging you.
You can do whatever you want. You just have to read for producers.
You have to audition.
I have to audition. But listen, man, I'm going to tell you. These guys, okay, the producer, Chris Miller and Phil. There I go again. I got a Phil back in my life. Phil Lord, no relation to God.
That's right.
But they are coming at this. Okay, these guys, man, they are class. Okay, mm-hmm. They did Spider-Man, Spider-Verse,
yep.
Lego Band, Batman movie. They done Emmanuel. They done all this stuff.
Yep.
Okay. And so I expect them to be able to lift me to be a better version of myself.
Maybe.
Okay. Just like Carmen Electra before she went to, you know, whatever the name is.
Dave Navarro.
I don't hear you.
Okay, fine. Mm-hmm. Something, whatever it is.
It's
some other guy who wasn't you and is not the worm and cannot confirm. Well, I want to see you land the lead role in this badly.
Randy, right now, we're going to prove this, okay, that okay. I can do this. I need a coach, okay?
Okay.
Here's how we're going to run it.
Okay.
Okay. You be the flight attendant on the flight to Vegas.
Okay.
All right? Jason's call action. Here we go.
Okay. And settle and action.
Sir, I need you to put your seatbelt on before we're allowed.
Hey, man, I have a drink here, okay? I can't do everything all at once. What do you want from me? United Airlines, more like Divided Airlines.
And scene. I love it, man. That is powerful. That is powerful stuff.
Check the gate.
We got it. Moving on.
Thanks, man. That's, you know, man, you get that deep inside of yourself.
Yeah.
Okay? It's hard to see out. So I appreciate you doing that with me, Randy. Jason, I appreciate you being the director. Maybe I talk to Phil and Chris, and we get you on the floor. Okay?
Great.
Or whatever. I don't know the surface you shoot movies on, but whatever it is.
I think this is going to
happen. It's a floor.
Worm, I love you, buddy, and I really, really, really want this to happen for you. We're going to manifest it to happen, okay?
Man, I appreciate it. Hey, man, quick shout out to Nicki Minaj.
Okay.
She is right. COVID does, it inflates your testicles.
It does not. The vaccine does not inflate.
Yeah, I think so. Well, listen, man, it's either that or one of the STDs I got. But that's,
okay.
Look, all I'm saying is I have not gotten that stuff, okay?
Okay.
And so where you're the safest is in a storm drain or Redondo.
Okay.
That's how you stay out of that COVID mess.
Okay.
Worm out.
There you go. There it is. Worm is out. That is a show. We got to love it. Give a mad props to Chris Cox Vox, our good friend. Follow him on Instagram. Of course, Michael Costa, Tennis Anyone, The Great Podcast. And holy smokes, man. We will we'll see you next week. Join our Patreon. Punch a waterfall, and we'll see you next week. Join our Patreon.
Didn't want to have to break your heart. Didn't want to have to do it. I tried to stop it from the very start, but you kept on trying. And I knew.
Star Burns Avenue, a podcast network.